Hi everyone, welcome to the Post Bougie podcast for the week of March 14th, 2010. This is Shawnee O in Central New Jersey, and today I'm joined by contributors Monica, who is in DC.
Hello.
And Jamel, who is in Charlottesville, VA.
Greetings.
We're man down this week, but we will carry on. So, this, as usual, we're going to take on three topics and then do shout outs and or shout downs to whatever we're feeling or not feeling this week. First up is a recent study that shows that the median income for women of color in the United States is $5. Second, marriage equality in D.C. has been achieved. And lastly, Mark Thiessen's appearance on The Daily Show. All right, topic number one. So something that's been circulating in my Twitter and Facebook world is a study by the Center for Community Economic Development that found that while all women are more likely than men to have zero or negative wealth, Black women and Latinas are twice as likely as white women are to have no wealth or to have debt. Moreover, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's story about the study had this shocking headline. Study finds median wealth for single Black women at $5. But as Ta-Nehisi Coates recently pointed out, all women of color have that median wealth, not just Black women. So, okay, it's possible that the author of the article just misread the study. But honestly, with all the pieces that about how Black women should basically just quit life, I suspect the author was just jumping on that bandwagon. Because the study brings up so many legitimate questions about why the situation is so poor for women of color, but the piece focuses almost entirely on Black women and how terrible it is for us, not how bad it is across the board for women of color. I mean, there is even a line in the article that said that the picture is bleak for working-age Black women whose median household wealth is $100, and then follows that up with that same number for Latinas is $20 more, as though that's, like, so much better. But I just thought it was, I mean, as Ta-Nehisi said, there are legitimate issues in this study that should be addressed. But the way this piece is framed as, oh no, Black women should just kill themselves at this point, is a little frustrating. Thoughts?
I mean, you know, it's just, I think writers, journalists, people not really thinking too hard about these things. That's why they immediately jump to that explanation, even if there's other far more interesting stuff in the study. Just there's a ready-made narrative for this sort of thing, and that is Black women face a whole host of troubles unique to Black women. And it's easy to fall back on.
And what's kind of funny is that a lot of people, I think, don't know the difference between, like, median and mean and average, like, you know, like, they're different kinds of averages, even though we learned this all in, like, seventh grade or whatever. because I got an email forward today from a woman who was saying, because she, you know, didn't really read the study, but she read the article that said Black women are only worth $5 on average. And she's like, ladies, I know it's a hard economic situation right now, but we can do better than $5. Let's start saving. Which, one, like, totally misses the point. And two, she's college educated, quite well employed, writing to other college educated, well employed women who are clearly above the $5 line. Well, most likely above the $5 line. I mean, I'm talking like homeowners. And so, you know, median is just the middle. It's not it's not the same as the average.
Yeah, I think people get confused because journalists will use a shorthand that says the median describes how the average person is doing, which is true, which is why we use median as opposed to averages. But I think that's part of the broader problem with this kind of journalism, too, especially because you don't see as many specialist journalists anymore, people who are used to reading studies, and so they just don't understand statistics at all or how to look at these studies at all.
Right. I think that really is the broader problem, and it extends to a whole bunch of things. If every journalist were given, you know, an introduction to statistics textbook or made to take an introduction to statistics class, I think we'd see much better journalism, or at least like journalism that doesn't confuse things like mediums and means, or gets that correlation, does not necessarily imply causation, or the other, you know, cute descriptions of statistical truth.
Yeah, I just think that the piece in general is kind of lazy, and it fit very neatly into the current narrative that we're seeing. I mean,
I was going to say, you meant the Pittsburgh story? The Pittsburgh?
Yeah,
the Pittsburgh
Post-Gazette story.
No, I didn't read the study, and really the first I heard about this is when we were discussing the topics for the podcast. But why exactly is it that, like, what is... $5 is really low.
Well, yeah. Okay, so the study kind of... Well, I'm sure Monica knows a bit about this, but just to say, the study, what it does is it measures kind of your debt versus your assets. And another thing that it found was, like, when you measure assets of women with their car and without their car, Black women disproportionately, their wealth disproportionately comes from the car, but, and the same for Latina women, but it's a depreciating asset. And it's not something that you can go to for funds. You know, if you need money, like if you need money for something, you can't go to your car. Whereas white women also, I mean, the entire, across the board, everybody, when you have a car, your wealth is, you have more wealth. But white women did not receive so much of their wealth from their car. But, so what was your question?
Why they have so low wealth?
Is that what is the causal thing going on? Is it?
Well, it's a really a host of factors that probably won't be surprising to anyone who listens to this podcast or reads Post Bougie, that it's that specifically women of color are hit by really hard by the institutional barriers to both being a woman and being someone of color.
Okay.
So, you know, so women are paid much lower. It's hard. It was harder for them to acquire assets, and it's still harder for them to acquire assets. So there's a gap from past generations in which they didn't receive assets as inheritances. Right. But also, go ahead.
I was like, if you like look at also public assistance, where women of color are more likely to be on public assistance, the policies and the rules around public assistance are actually barriers to building wealth as well.
Yeah, and the thing with the car too, the part of the reason they excluded the car to determine wealth is that actually owning a car that's remotely valuable at all, you know, that's even really low value, like $5,000, which basically just means it's a car you can drive, it would prevent you from getting benefits in a lot of states because it's considered an asset when it really shouldn't be.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this the other day. Like my car, I probably am at the point where I owe about as much as it's worth, so I'm breaking even on it, but yeah, it's not really an asset. I mean, it gets me to work, but...
I'm actually underwater on my car. You know, like people are with their mortgages.
Do you need a bailout for your car?
I'm gonna walk away, strategic default. But yeah, it's basically what you would suspect. Like, women are paid less, and so it's harder for them to acquire assets. And also,
Single parents... being a single parent greatly affects how much money you have.
And that was one of the things that was really surprising is how hard it is for women with children to get hired, even compared to with women who don't have children. And actually, like most of the gender gap, it seems like we think of is really a child gap. So like, a child having gap. So like, women without children are paid like 90 cents on the dollar compared with their male counterparts. But women with children of any age are paid much, much less.
Yeah, because the expectation is if you have kids, you're not going to be able to focus. Yeah, and if you're a single parent, you aren't. I mean, to some extent, you're going to have trouble. Your kids are probably your priority if you're a single parent. You're the only person looking out for them. But that's not a reason, of course, to be paid less. But kids, man, I love kids. I love other people's kids, but they are a financial sinkhole.
Man, I'm gonna go out there and say that I am pretty much anti-child. Completely.
Look at Jamel.
Yeah. 40. Well, don't men? I mean, men are the ones who benefit most from having children, right? They.
Yeah. Do we?
Yeah, you do. It's better for your health, like to be married with kids. It's better for your health. It's better for your career.
Wait. Is it to be married with kids or is it to be married?
No, with children. Children are important part of that.
That's That's why, did you see, Shani, that study? You too, Jamel, I'll ask if you saw it too. But there was a study, a study about how, like, all these young men in relationships kind of said they would be secretly happy if they got pregnant.
I did see that. Like, men are more likely to be okay or happy about their girlfriend getting pregnant than women are.
Unplanned pregnancy, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's okay.
Because they totally know they win without any of the consequences. Yeah.
They get to play with the kid, and she has to deal with everything else.
And she takes a big cut in her pay for the rest of her life.
Exactly. Until, you know, and then when she's old enough to, like, not have to worry about them, it's too late because she'll be over the hill and nobody wants to pay her. So.
Yeah. She drives a car that isn't worth anything anymore. Appreciating asset.
We're screwed. Okay.
So what's the next topic?
Yeah, I mean, that's one more thing I wanted to tie it to. Was it's kind of interesting when I think about this and tie it kind of to that, the whole, the black abortion, the high rate of abortion among black women. I mean, like, this right here, it to me is proof that these women are not being coerced into having abortions. They cannot afford another, like, black women just, when they have abortions, they know they just simply cannot afford to have another child. You know? Like, I think that's such a huge part of it. So to say, oh, these women would be having 10 kids if they weren't, you know, if it weren't for the genocide. No. So many women are so poor, they can barely afford the children that they have already. So, anyway, I think it's interesting to see how it all kind of ties together. But, all right. So topic number two. Neither the Catholic Church nor Marion Barry could keep D.C. from enacting marriage equality. Monica, as our D.C. correspondent, can you tell us how bad the hellfire is?
The hellfire? I actually have been burning in hell for a long time, so I can't help you with that. No, yeah, exactly. No, so D.C. allows gay marriages now, and it's awesome. And I actually, you know, lived in a place that allowed gay marriages for a year before this in Connecticut. So I am a resident who is completely used to marriage equality now. The one thing about the D.C. law, so couples started to get marriage licenses this week. It was the first week they could. And the Supreme Court before that had denied a request to issue a stay to prevent the licenses from being issued while the case is being tried in court. So basically, D.C. has a Human Rights Act that prevents votes that deal with discriminatory issues from going to public referendum. So the D.C. Council voted to allow gay marriage. Some groups want it to be put to public referendum, but right now it's protected under the Human Rights Act here. That is being challenged. Whether it should belong under that umbrella is being challenged in court. So that's probably where the real battle will take place. You know, it could be a California Prop 8 thing where you have all these couples who are married and then suddenly the right to marry is overturned. So really what happens next will determine how, you know, how awesome D.C. is.
Well, D.C. is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty partial to it. I think it's so awesome that gay marriage legalized in D.C. I think that's really, really cool. I was very, very pleased when that went down.
Yeah, I didn't totally expect it, to be honest. I don't
really?
Yeah, I don't remember why. I mean, it just seems every time we put it to lawmakers aren't very forward-thinking about these things, are not very brave, you know. So it was approved by a pretty resounding vote, right? 12-1 in the D.C. City Council. So,
I mean, but do you think that's the case? I mean, off the top of my head, I know that it hasn't so much been lawmakers that have been super reticent about passing gay marriage statutes. It's been, you know, opponents who immediately take it to a referendum. Knowing quite well that most people, even if they aren't, like, even if they have no animus towards gay people, are hesitant about, like, change and will vote against it.
Well, the most recent examples are New York and New Jersey, where really probably if you put it to public referendum, it would probably win. But the state legislatures aren't having it.
Yeah, true.
So has there been any...
Oh, go ahead.
With regards to the Catholic Church and their social services stuff, have you heard anything? I know the last thing they said was that they were
They were going to withdraw contracts.
Yeah, any other contracts with the city because of gay marriage or gay couples being allowed to adopt.
Yeah, they're still saying they're going to do that. And they said they were going to do that in Massachusetts, too. And I have to be really honest, and I don't know right now whether they continue to not do that in Massachusetts. That would be pretty bad for the city for them to withdraw help. But I don't know if they've actually started to withdraw help yet, but that is still a stance that they're taking, that they're not going to offer Catholic charity services because the city allowed gay marriage. And that's... you know, generally true. The Catholic Church is weird to me in that regard because it's always been very willing to step into the breach and protect poor people and have all these great programs in cities where there are high concentrations of poverty. And then just one issue can set it off that much. You'd think that their mission to help poor people wouldn't be so easily sidetracked.
Hey, I mean, the gays, they're dangerous. I mean, yeah. this isn't really a surprise, right? Like, the most frustrating thing about sort of the Catholic bishop's opposition to healthcare reform, or at least to the healthcare reform in its current version, is that they're completely willing to derail a bill that will provide insurance to 30-plus million people over, like, you know, what are almost transparently disingenuous concerns over abortion. Like... It seemed like the Catholic hierarchy, or at least like a very influential part of the Catholic hierarchy, they're just total culture warriors, and they're willing to sacrifice all sorts of priorities if it means either sticking it to the gays or sticking it to the bitches.
Yeah, I just looked it up really quickly too, and they employees of Catholic charities are being told that the health benefits and other benefits are adjusted so that the Catholic Church won't have to honor same-sex marriage partners as beneficiaries and those things. So it looks like it'll be a legal battle, I think, maybe on a different front. But whether Catholic Charities can continue honoring its contracts or not just because a city passed a law, I don't know how that will hold up legally.
Yeah, and it's. I hope it doesn't hold up legally because it just opens up this... really terrible hostage-taking situation, right, where in cities where Catholic charities are particularly influential, they can say, well, if you do this, we're just going to withdraw services, and tough shit, you know? That's... I don't know, obviously, under the law, but, you know, from a layman's perspective, it seems, like Ben said, a really terrible precedent for action on part of cities and municipalities and such.
Yeah, and I really hope you can't nullify contract that easily either.
Yeah, like, that also.
You went about your normal business of making law, but I disagree with the law that you made, so I'm gonna not honor this contract. That seems really not like it would hold up. But I mean, it could also just like not renew contracts for the future of the church.
Yeah.
But I think,
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I really hope that it's not that easy for the Catholic Church to have that much leverage over lawmakers. That would be really counter to democracy.
I think this is funny since it also doesn't come on the heels, but it comes shortly before. In Virginia, we had our own little thing about gay people last month, our Governor Bob McDonnell was like, hey, about protections from, you know, discrimination gay people, we're just gonna like not include you in that, so it would be lame if people discriminate against you, but not exactly illegal. And then earlier this week, Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who I will say, as someone who worked for Creed's last year or stages of my life, someone who worked for Creed last year, you know, I see how Bob McDonnell won. I mean, Virginia has a habit of electing these sort of ultra bland, ultra technocratic governors, and that's cool. Mark Warner was cool. Tim Kaine was cool. And although Bob McDonnell was, I mean, I think Bob McDonnell is an extremist on a lot of social issues, and definitely on physical issues. he was able to hide it really well. Ken Cuccinelli, by contrast, is just straight up crazy. Like, there's no... I think anyone who watches campaign videos, like who's been paying attention to Cuccinelli for any amount of time, like 10 minutes, right? You listen to Ken Cuccinelli for 10 minutes, and you're like, man, this guy is unhinged. Anyway, so Cuccinelli crazy, and late last week he issued a recommendation to the governor, saying that you should let state universities know that they don't have any legal authority to institute anti-discrimination policies, particularly those targeting sexual orientation.
Public universities.
Virginia's weird in that we don't so much have a university system as we have a bunch of, like, basically private universities that are publicly, or at least partially publicly funded. So UVA is public university, William Mary is public university, Virginia Tech, JMU, Mary Washington, a lot of these universities that you think were private are actually, they're public. But that caused a huge uproar in the state. And so Governor McDonald, he didn't really withdraw the recommendation because it wasn't his to give in the first place, but he kind of clarified and said that no, discriminating against gays and lesbians is not cool, which in effect was him stepping back from his previous position, because Cuccinelli's own position was based off of an argument McDonald made when he was Attorney General. So I say all of this only to say that A, go gay people in Virginia, and B, maybe my initial assessment of Bob McDonald as a dyed-in-the-wool extremist might be a little off. Maybe he is pragmatic enough to see when these battles aren't worth fighting, which gives me hope that at least on social issues, organization and outcry can maybe push him back from the bridge, the brink, rather.
Yeah, that's what you want, right? You want, if progress isn't going to happen fast, then you at least want it to not retreat, right?
Right.
That's, like, sad, but you want to at least hold the ground on the status quo.
All right, let's go on to topic number 3. Jamel's new favorite person.
Yes, Mark. Is it Thiessen? Thiessen? Mark Idiot?
It doesn't matter.
Idiot, yeah.
he got his backside handed to him on The Daily Show.
Yeah, no. So for those of you who did not watch, Mark Thiessen was on The Daily Show hawking his new book. And Jon Stewart, over the course of the 10-minute interview that aired on the show, and the whole 30 or so minute interview that you could watch online, completely owned Thiessen. It was not, about 5 minutes in, the game was up, really, and the rest was just watching Thiessen struggle for air as Jon Stewart smothered him.
kind of difficult to watch, actually.
No, it was. It was incredibly difficult to watch, in large part because Thiessen was so disingenuous the entire time. Like, there would be lots of instances where he would say something like, we know, you're saying we can't use interrogation to capture these terrorists, which is a really misleading way of putting it. We captured suspected terrorists, and there was a difference. There was a very clear, qualitative difference between a terrorist whom they're guilty if we're labeling them a terrorist, and a person suspected of terrorism for whom we think they may have committed or been planning to commit terrorist acts in the United States. We don't actually know. And this sort of, like, lots of bending language, it was really frustrating. There's a particular part at the end, right, where Thiessen is repeatedly making the claim that if not for waterboarding, we would not have gotten this information from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and Jon Stewart asked them, how can you say that we wouldn't have gotten that information? Like, is it possible that we would have gotten that information by not waterboarding him? And they just couldn't answer. Like, he refused to answer the question. It was really funny because Jon Stewart's like, answer. That is a hypothetical. That is a hypothetical. at one point, Jon Stewart's like, is this yes or no? Yes or no? And Thiessen just can't answer the goddamn question.
Because he would be lying, or he doesn't know the answer. What I liked was when Jon Stewart asked about all of the people that Bush released or tried in, I guess, civil court. And he was just like, well, that was wrong, too. And then tried to kind of move the target a little bit.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he started whining about how John didn't let him get a word in edgewise.
Oh, man, that was so annoying. I would say, like, Spencer Ackerman and Adam Serwer both joked that, you know, poor Theisen can't finish his point. Maybe he should talk to people who are locked up indefinitely in prisons. You know,
as opposed to a talk show host.
Yeah.
Talk to the folks who are beaten to death, and then start complaining about not being able to finish his goddamn sentence. Which, by the way, he was making a stupid, stupid point. So, you know, who cares if he can't finish this? I don't care.
Look, can I ask you guys more broadly about Jon Stewart and how either sad or scary or awesome you think it is that we completely rely on him to do these interviews? Like, almost no one else is doing interviews where we really hold people's feet to the fire, and when they say something's ridiculous, you call them out on its ridiculousness as opposed to just letting finish their talking points. And I think that also is why we got so disappointed when he dropped the ball on the John John Yoo one. But it's also, it's like, he's not a journalist, he's a talk show host, and you know, sometimes that's probably going to happen because we are relying on one interviewer to have all the good interviews, you know?
I mean, yeah, he's kind of the, like, he says the things that we want to say, and sometimes even smart, like, more smarter. Like, smartly makes his points, and knows what he's talking about, but it is kind of sad. And not that he's the only one, but that there's no one else doing it, if that makes any sense. You know, like, not that he's doing, the problem isn't that he's doing what he does, the problem is that nobody else is doing it.
Right.
Yeah, and there are lots of journalists who are that smart, too. They know when something's a talking point. I don't know what it is. There used to be a space for you as a journalist to sound fair, and you would say, well, what your opponents say is that doesn't make sense because of X, X, and X. And then that would at least make that person try to back up their point. Right. But nobody even does that anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the most frustrating thing to me, especially during the election, and even now is when I read a story. And so, yeah, so what's frustrating is that all facts are kind of presented as equal with no, not even all facts are presented as equal. Everything that's said is presented as equal without, like, I thought, you know, journalists, part of what journalists do is not just report what was said, but report if it's true or not, you know?
Right.
And there, that doesn't happen anymore. And Jon Stewart is the only person who does that now, where he's like, just because you say it doesn't mean it's true.
But I think that's why, you know, that's in part why blogs became so popular, because people weren't necessarily just looking for a presentation of the facts, but for also a value judgment. And value judgment doesn't have to be ideological per se.
Judging whether or not X is true. You know?
Yeah, it's frustrating to read, like,
definable as true or false.
It's frustrating to read a piece, say, about, you know, I don't know, climate change or global warming, whatever you want to call it, and there is, I mean, for oftentimes there won't be sort of an acknowledgement that, hey, this person disagrees, but they're in the very, very tiny minority.
Right. Of it's just scientists. This person disagrees.
Yeah.
And with no qualification.
Right.
Well, I will say with politics, I mean, with the New York Times, they will present things in a way that will acknowledge when something's kind of blatantly untrue. Like, they'll say, oh, so-and-so said this, but the CBO has found that those numbers don't hold up.
Yeah.
But then there'll be an accompanying story that's just the political story, and it presents the political arguments as equal. Or what you'll see, too, is that, and this is my problem with us relying on, you know, blogs so much to do this too, even though I'm kind of a professional blogger in some ways, but, and we all blog obviously, but the big thing too with relying on blogs and things that can seem partisan to really really delve into the facts of things is that whatever you don't agree with, you can just dismiss as partisan or opinionated. And that's the problem always with my conservative family members. They just think the New York Times is ideological because everything else is ideological. And everything else is tainted by the story that you want to tell as opposed to just laying out the facts. And also, they don't seem to understand the difference between opinionated and partisan. Like, just because I have opinions doesn't necessarily mean I'm aligned with a particular party on every single thing all the time. Right. So I just think there's just a general lack of discourse that has anything to do with any kind of honesty. And a lot of it, I think, is because of television news, more so than any other kind of news.
So my question has always been, is this any different than the past? Because I immediately jumped to sort of the early era of newspapers when things were, not just very opinionated, but incredibly partisan, and people regularly dismissed information or, stories based on whether or not, their source. And I don't know. It seems to me, at least, like the difference isn't so much that the average American is, has partisan ideological blunders all the time, but that elites do. That the political elites have become more polarized and more ideological, and that's sort of what's become problematic about our political discourse. Because it doesn't seem like, to me at least, and I admittedly I don't have a super deep knowledge of any of these things, but on the surface, there doesn't really seem to be a dramatic change in the level of, ideological fervency of the average person. Back to DSN, that I thought Adam Sawyer made a really good point at his blog about how DSN doesn't really seem. He definitely has a particular ideological agenda, but he also seems incredibly petulant and upset that his friends got made fun of by those mean old liberals, and now he gets to make fun of the mean old liberals sort of thing. I think Adam called it the tribalism of Mark Thiessen, but it really seems to fit. He along with Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney, that whole crew of people seem to really believe that law exists for the purposes of punishing people they don't like. That's terrifying to me. I'm actually terrified and astounded by the fact that for 8 years our government was run by people who believe this, and people who in their opinions and in their positions are not even a stone's throw from monarchists. These are, and not even the quaint ones in England, but people who honestly believe that, those who govern are exempt from the laws which they apply.
Well, that wraps up topic number 3.
And now for puppies.
So now for our shoutdowns. Jamal.
Okay. I have 2 shout outs. The first is to blogger John Cole. literally an hour and a half ago, 2 hours ago, John Cole tweeted that he was gonna basically pester Ezra Klein on Twitter until Ezra Klein follows him. And sort of half jokingly, I replied to John Cole, "Hey, you should follow me because I like your blog and I blog too." And he did, and I think that's cool.
John Cole started following me after I said that I didn't like the Fireflies theme song. And then
you don't?
It's bad, okay?
The Fireflies
theme song is really... It's terrible. It's very catchy, but it's not a good song. John Cole proceeded to pester me about how I hate America because I don't like the Firefly theme song.
I think he's absolutely right too. But back to me.
What's your second shout out? Yes,
my second shout out.
I want you to bask in this moment. Go ahead.
My second shout out is to the phenomenal hand clap band, which I just discovered. I don't know why. I've been sleeping on them for a year now. That's when their debut album came out. But they're fantastic. They're, in a word, phenomenal. And you should listen to them. They're like kind of like the Go team, except not as spastic.
I don't know what that means.
Good.
Ouch. Okay. Monica.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to shout out.
Shout down Pepco.
No. I'm going to shout out The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. I finished it on audiobook this week, as everybody knows, because I wrote about it. I wish I had read it because I enjoyed it that much. But it has a few problems, but it's really a fantastic book. And it's interesting for many reasons. It's the science of it is interesting, but it's also interesting because even though, you know, it's presented as the story of this woman whose cells were taken, which it is, it's also really the story of her family and of her daughter. And the reporter really cared about her subjects a great deal, and I think that comes across. She spent a lot of time with them, and she really immersed herself in this topic for a decade, and it was before that her life's passion to write a book about this. I think that becomes really clear, and so for nothing else, it's worth it because you see the author as a character in that way in this book. So it's, but also just the topic itself is so really, really good and really, really horrifying because it's not just a story of the past. This could happen today. A doctor who takes your cells for diagnostic purposes can keep them and make millions off them. It's not a story that's over.
Well, I really, really want to read it. Okay, so my shout out is to The Race Beat. Today I was walking back from lunch by this bookstore that I always vow never to go into because I have a problem when I go into a bookstore and I buy books. But as I was walking by, I saw they had like a shelf out on the sidewalk and The Race Beat was on it and it was on sale for like $9. And since GD has been talking it up so much and it's something that I've actually wanted to read for probably going on 2 years, I decided to pick it up. And apparently it's, it's about kind of the history of journalists, segregation, black journalists, and so on. So I'm really excited to read it. And yeah, that's my shout out. So that's going to do it for this week's podcast. On behalf of Jamel and Monica, this is Shawnee, and I'd like to thank you all for listening. Catch you next time.
Our theme music is 8 by Aeon. You can catch us at postbougie.com.
Done.